Welcome to the Skokie Kolo Podcast. Here you can listen to recent shiurim given by members of the Kolo and special guests who spoke at the Kolo. For older shiurim, open the Learn tab above and select Audio Archive.
Hello, my name is Ari Sendek, and it's my pleasure to share with you a Devar Torah for Parshas Lech Lecha. Although we are told almost nothing about Avram Avinu in the beginning of the Parsha, and why it is that Hashem is choosing him, we know Avram Avinu mainly for two things. For the fact that he is the Ish HaChesed, he is the King of Chesed, and for the fact that he was the one to spread the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, the father of monotheism. And I was at a Shalom Zachar made by a Chavrusa of mine where he asked, are these two things linked? Is there a connection between the fact that Avram Avinu teaches us the Midah of Chesed and that he taught us about the one HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And his father-in-law, Rabbi Meir Tversky, Shlita, Rosh Yeshiva at YU, quoted this idea in the name of his grandfather, Rabbi Soloveitchik. The Gemara in Sota, Daf Yud Amud Aleph going on to Amud Beis, quotes really a pasuk from next week's parasha, Vayita Ish LeBe'er Shava, where according to one opinion in the Gemara, Avram had a pundak, an inn, a hotel, where people would come and eat and be refreshed in the desert. And then, after they ate, they would want to thank Avram Avinu. And he would say, V'chi mishali achaltem. You think you're eating my food? Mishalo ke'olam achaltem. You're eating the food from the God of the world. Hodu v'shibchu u'baruchu l'mish amar v'hoya ha'olam. Praise and bless and thank the one who said, let there be a world. The Tosfos Shant on the side of the Gemara, and the Tosfos Resh as well, quote, that there is more to this story. They quote, in the name of the Medrash, that at first the guests would not want to bless HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ad she'amar lehem Avram, until Avram said to them, Piru mash'achaltem v'shasisem. If you don't want a bench, pay for everything that you ate or drank. And he would tell them, this is not cheap food. V'haya'amar lehem, shehu ola leminyan gadol. This is expensive food. They were in the desert. It was really difficult for me to get this food here to the middle of the desert. When they knew that Avram wanted them to pay for everything, then they benched against their will
in order not to pay anything.
Really? That's how Avram got them to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by forcing them, telling them that you have to pay for the meal if you don't bench, doesn't seem like the best kirov approach. So Rabbi Soloveitchik Zatzal explained that Avram was really presenting them with a philosophical argument. Who says that there should be something called chesed? If I earn something, if something belongs to me, why should I give it to you? It's mine. It's not yours. Why should I lose? Why should I give of myself? It's only if you recognize that there is a Hashem who created the world in the ultimate act of kindness, of chesed, and we have to follow that God and emulate that God, then it makes sense that there is something called chesed and that I could feed you. But if you don't want to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then there's no reason, there's no source for the midah of chesed, and therefore you might as well pay me for the whole meal. And therefore it is definitely linked that Avram Avinu, because of how much he recognized HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us and does for us, that's why he had this great midah of chesed. A powerful lesson for us, that we think about the kindness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that should make us into Balei Chesed as well. I don't know if we could get the best cure of advice from this story, and if our guests will be on that level of understanding. But as an aside, I did see another approach to what Avram Avinu was trying to do here. The Sefer Zayis Ra'anan writes that it was when the guests would see how much money Avram Avinu is willing to forgo just for them to say a bracha, to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that drive inspired them so much and they decided to become Jews. So there you have a good chinuch lesson of teaching by example.
If you're interested, there is a similar approach to Rav Soloveitchik's in Pachad Yitzchak, page 180, Kuntras Yerach HaEsonim in the first Maimar. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Hello, this is Ari Burian. In this week's Parsha, Parshas Lech Lecha, we're introduced to Avram's journey from Haran to Eretz Yisrael. And the Pasuk says, Vayom Hashem el Avram, Hashem spoke to Avram and he said, Lech Lecha, you shall go me'artzecha from your land, miladetcha and from your birthplace, m'beis avicha and from your father's house, el ha'aretz asher areka, to the land that I'm going to show you. And the double word Lech Lecha, Rashi tells us, Lech Lecha, go for yourself, for your own benefit, la'anascha u'letovascha, for your benefit and for your good, that this is all for you, Avraham, you're going to get tremendous benefit from this. And there's an interesting medrash on this pasuk that mentions that there's another time that Hashem speaks to Avraham and says, Lech Lecha. When he goes to the Kedah, when he goes to sacrifice his son Yitzchak, it says, V'lech lecha el ha'aretz ha'moriah, that you should go to the land of Moriah, the Har HaBayis, where the future home of the Beis HaMikdash, that's where you should bring your son up as a korban. And so the Medrash says, I don't know which one is more dear to Hashem. Was it this lech lecha, go to this land that I'm going to show you? Or was it lech lecha, go climb the mountain and offer your son as a sacrifice? And the Nesiv HaShalom points this out. He says, a very interesting question that the Medrash could possibly have. If you look at the two tests, one is, go to a land that I'm going to show you. So you're going to pack your bags, you're going to go, you don't know where you're heading. And the other one is, take your one son who you've lived your entire life for, who you waited 100 years to have a child, to have a son, and sacrifice him? It seems that there's no comparison, that second test is much harder. But yet the Medrash says, we don't know which one is more chaviv, which one is more dear to Hashem. And furthermore, the Nesiv HaShalom points out, he says, to say by Lech Lecha in our pasuk, that it's for your benefit. How can you then say in the story of the Akedah, of binding of Yitzchak, that Hashem is telling him, go Avram for your benefit? How could it be a benefit for Avram to sacrifice his son? How is it something that would make sense to Avram when Hashem tells him that? So the Nesiv HaShalom points out that really every single person, starting with Avram, going out to every single Jew today, is on a journey. We're put in this world for a purpose, to go and reach our final destination. There's a reason we're in this world. And if we just go through life, and we follow the Torah, and we do mitzvahs, but we don't actually fulfill our tafkid, our purpose in this world, we have not yet accomplished why we are here. And so Hashem commands Avram in different stages of his life, go for this and go for that. And if you look at the two tests, they're actually exact opposites. The test of Lech Lecha, go to the land that I'm going to show you. It's something that Avram is going to go on this journey that's going to take many, many days, and he doesn't know when it's going to end. And it doesn't seem difficult on a daily basis, but day in and day out to be involved in this test is going to be something that's difficult. Versus the story of Har Moriah, going and bringing Yitzchak as the Akedah, bringing Yitzchak on the Mizbeach, that's a one-time deal. It's a one-time shot. It's one day and it's done, but it's much more difficult. If you look at it also, looking back two parshas to Bereishis, when Adam and Chava are both given a punishment for eating from the tree of knowledge, seemingly they should be given equal punishments. They should be equal in their magnitude. And the punishment of Chava is that she has difficulty giving birth to children. And the punishment to Adam is that he has to work every single day. And if you think about it, they're pretty similar in magnitude, just in scope they're different. For Chava, she has to go through the pain of childbirth, which is tremendous pain, much more painful than going to work every single day. The punishment for Adam is he has to go to work every day. He has to work hard for his food. So if you look at it, going to work one day isn't so bad, but to do it every day until you get to retire is quite a long amount of work in this world. Equal to that is the amount of pain that a woman will feel during childbirth, which is short, but much more intense. And these are the two tests of Avraham, the test of Lech Lecha, go from your land, go every single day, walk on this path forwards and forwards in your service of Hashem. And conversely, the test of Lech Lecha to the land of Moriah, where he has to bring up his son, which is a one-day test, but tremendously painful, tremendously intense. So really to say which one is more chaviv, is more dear to Hashem, it's hard to say. They both have tremendous value. We go through daily tests where we're walking on our journey trying to be good Jews, and sometimes we're given a tremendously difficult test, which is short-lived, but very strong, and we have to excel in both of them. We have to succeed in both of them. And what Rashi's telling us, Lech Lecha, go for your benefit and go for your good, we see that that's true in both of them. Whether it's something that's difficult and intense or something that's less difficult but long-term, they're all for your benefit, for us to grow to our final destination. And finally, the Nesiv HaShalom brings the Arizal, who says that every single person in this world is given different tests in their life because they have a different place to get to. It's not that one person should be given an easier life or more difficult life, but every person is given both their physical and their spiritual capabilities in order to get to their destination. Why is one person born rich and one person born poor? You might say that's not fair, but Hashem designated every single person all their physical needs so that they could go and grow in that situation and reach their potential that they could only reach through having those conditions, whether they're physically good or physically bad, whether they're spiritually good or spiritually bad. Some people, it's easy for them to learn Torah, to connect with Hashem. For some people, it's more difficult, but every single person is given that purpose to, this is my starting point, and then move forward from there. And I'd just like to share with you a story related to this. I heard from Rav Fishel Schechter. The Tasha Rav was a great Rav, and he used to have many people wait to go and speak to him. And there was a poor man who was going to come and ask him for money, that he really needed help financially. And behind him in line, there was a very wealthy man. And when the Rav came out, he saw the poor man in front, and he motioned to the wealthy man behind him. He said, come in. And he took the wealthy man in first. Then he closed the door, and they met. And then the wealthy man left, and the poor man was so furious. How dare the Rav give him kavod over me? I'm also a human being. I've been waiting in line longer than him. And so he comes in, and he starts yelling at the Rav. He said, it's not fair. What, because he's wealthy, you take care of him first? I'm also important. And the Rav said, sorry, this is the way that I thought it should be done. And the man said, I came here because I really need some money. And the Rav gave him some money. He gave him what he needed, and he walked away. And so the Gabayim, the assistants of the Rav, saw what happened. They said, what's going on here? He said, I knew this poor man was here for money, and I didn't have any money to give him. I saw him behind him in line. There was a wealthy man. So I thought, if I could bring the wealthy man in first, I'll ask him to make a donation, and then I'll give it to the poor man. And that's exactly what I did. He gave me a donation, and then when the poor man came in, I gave him the money that I just received 2 minutes before. So the Gabayim said, how come you didn't tell the poor man? He was angry. He wouldn't have understood anyways. He was just involved in the situation. It wasn't worth saying anything. And he let him walk away, and he gave him the money. But the message is, this is exactly how Hashem works with us. We're waiting in line. We want to ask for what we get. We say, Hashem, how come it's not fair? This person gets this, and I didn't get that, and my lot is different than his lot, and I should have that. How come I don't? And why does he go first? So Hashem has his reason for each one of us. And the reason that you're where you are and he's where he is because you need to fulfill your purpose that you can only do from your spot, and he needs to do his purpose that he can only do from his spot. And your spot might mean that you have to be more wealthy or less wealthy, or chas v'shalom, sick or healthy or strong or weak or tall or short. And Hashem gives each person exactly what they need to fulfill their purpose. So how come Hashem doesn't tell us? Because we wouldn't understand. We would have our complaints anyways, and we have to get past that. But the message is that Hashem was telling Avram, when you lech lecha, go, everything that I gave you is for your benefit, that you can grow from there and become great, that the Tasha Rav was giving to this poor man, he didn't need to explain to him why. He just gave, and that's what Hashem does for us. He gives us everything we need. We need to take everything around us that Hashem gave us and grow with it. And we're starting a new year. We just went through all of the beautiful Yom Tovim. We're going into a long winter, and it's an opportunity for us to take everything Hashem gave us until now and walk forwards on our path to lech lecha, go for our own benefit in the direction that Hashem will guide us. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
My name is Yirmiyahu Newman. I would like to share an insight on Parshas Lech Lecha. We find in Parshas Lech Lecha, as Avraham goes with Sarah to Mitzrayim, he's afraid that perhaps the Mitzrayim will kill him because they'll want to take Sarah. So he tells Sarah, please tell them that you're my sister. If one thinks about it, we can learn an incredible lesson in human nature. Why would the Mitzrayim be willing to kill Avram Avinu in order to take Sarah? The reason would be because they know that if Sarah's married, they would not be allowed to live with her. We know that B'nai Noach are obligated to keep 7 mitzvos. One of them is Arias. They're not allowed to commit adultery. Therefore, they feel that the best option would be to kill Avram Avinu if he's married to Sarah. But that doesn't make any sense, because B'nai Noach are also not allowed to kill. That's one of the 7 mitzvos B'nai Noach. So what difference does it make whether they kill Avram Avinu or they live with Sarah in an adulterous fashion? It makes no sense. The Chizkuni explains that this was the calculation of the people of Mitzrayim. Avram understood that they'd be willing to kill him because better to be over one Isser, it's better to transgress one sin than to transgress multiple sins. If they were to constantly violate Sarah when Avram was alive, constantly commit adultery, that is many, many sins. versus killing Avraham, one time is one sin. You see a very strong lesson in human nature that a person can rationalize, but it makes no sense. Either way, the midstream recognize they're doing an avera, they're doing a sin, punishable by death. But still, one wants to lessen the blow, lessen the severity of the sin. It's better to do one sin than multiple sins. But a sin is a sin. What difference does it make? If you are aware that you're doing a sin, you want to refrain from doing it. But a person's Yetzirah tells them otherwise and allows a person to rationalize and make all types of calculations and cheshbonos to allow themselves to partake in their taivas, to run after their desires, and a person doesn't think clearly because, again, in any case, one is doing an avera. So it's an incredible lesson in how a person thinks to justify the actions they take. Ultimately, in this story, we find that Paro finds out the hard way that Sarah is indeed married to Avraham and his family is afflicted. Ultimately, they give gifts to Avraham. And it says, Ulavram hetiv ba'avura. They benefited Avram because of Sarah, because they felt indebted to Avram, and they felt that he was wronged, so they gave him stuff, hetiv. So the Maharal Diskin explains, it doesn't say nasan, they didn't give him stuff, but hetiv, they benefited him. What does it mean they benefited him? So the Maharal Diskin explains that they just didn't give him different assets or animals or riches directly. Rather, they gave him benefits that the general population did not have. An example is, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that the midstream wouldn't let cows leave Alexandria unless the womb was taken out, because they had a monopoly on high-quality cows, and if the cows left Egypt and they would reproduce in other places, so all the other countries would also have very fine cows. So to guarantee that they had a monopoly on high-quality cows, if a cow were to leave Egypt, it would have to have its womb taken out. So there are all types of rules and regulations in all countries. Egypt was no exception. Avram Avinu, however, because the people felt indebted to him, they gave him these special benefits, hetiv ba'avura. They dropped regulations and different rules that applied to everyone else. They dropped it from Avram Avinu, and his business practices were able to flourish, and he amassed great wealth because he was not beholden to a lot of the rules and regulations that the general populace was beholden to. That's why it says, Ula Avram hetiv ba'avura. He was benefited. They benefited him because of Sarah. They didn't just give him things, but he benefited, and that allowed him to amass great wealth.
Hello, my name is Dovi Turkeltaub, and I'd like to share with you a Devar Torah on Parshas Lech Lecha. Sometimes we find people that they have a machlokes with each other, and they've been fighting, they haven't spoken to each other, they've been angry at each other for years. You ask them, what is it exactly that you're fighting about? And they won't even remember what the original fight was about. But where did it start from? It started, they had a small little fight once upon a time, and the fight extended and extended until it got out of hand. They don't even know what they're fighting about. They just know that we don't talk to each other. Unfortunately, we find families that are like that, people in shul, etc. And the idea is that we have to stop the fight before it gets out of control. We find this concept in this week's parsha. The pasuk says, "Vayihi riv bein royei mikna Avram ubein royei mikna Loit." There was a riv. There was a fight between the shepherds of Avram and the shepherds of Loit. "Vayomer Avram Loit." Avram said to Loit, "Al not him riva bein uvinecha. Shouldn't be a meriva fight between us ubein royei uvein recha, between your shepherds and my shepherds. Ki anoshem achanem anachnu, because we're all brothers." So the question is, the wording of the pasuk changes. The pasuk says, "Vayihi riv." There was a riv, a fight an argument, a disagreement between the shepherds of Avram and the shepherds of Lot. When Avram is discussing this with Lot and tells him that there shouldn't be any more disagreement, what does he do? He changes the expression of Al na tehe miriva. He changes from riv to riva. So what is this change of expression in the pasuk? So the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh explains the difference between the word riv and the word miriva. Explains the riv is the actual fight. There was the siba, the reason of what caused them to have a disagreement. In this case between Avram, the shepherds of Avram were accusing the shepherds of Lot of stealing, of allowing their animals to graze on other people's property. And he says that expression of riv is a zocher. And he says riva is a lashon nekeva. What does lashon nekeva mean? That is, a nekeva multiplies. He says the lashon of riva is when that fight gets out of hand and it continues to increase and to multiply. Meaning from the original fight that they were fighting about, it blew up and it continues and continues to the point where we don't know what we're fighting about. And he explains, that's what the pasuk is telling us. First, there was a riv. There was a fight between the shepherds of Avram and the shepherds of Lot. And there was a reason why they were disagreeing. Now when Avram came to Lot and he says, I'm worried about something. I see that our shepherds are having a disagreement, but I'm afraid from that disagreement, you know what will come out of that disagreement? Will come a meriva. It will come out of hand, and we won't know what we were fighting about. So in the beginning, there was a riv, there was a reason, but Avram wanted to stop that riv before it turned into a meriva. And that's why the pasuk concludes, Vayomer Avram al Lot al notehi meriva. The lesson is that we have to learn that whenever we have a disagreement about something, we have to make sure right away to resolve our disagreements and not, chas v'shalom, ever let our disagreements come into merivas. And if we look into it, most disagreements that we have with people, we don't even understand the original disagreement. So let's just take a small lesson of Avram. And whenever we have a riv, a disagreement with someone, let's say, like Avram said, Teloit, al na tehe meriva. Let's make sure that all our disagreements stay as a riv and not create merivas. Have a great, great Shabbos.
Hello, my name is Noach Baron. This is actually my Bar Mitzvah Parsha, so of course, I would like to speak about Parshas Lech Lecha, and of course, the mitzvah that comes up in Parshas Lech Lecha is the mitzvah of Bris Milah. In fact, I spoke about this at one of my kids' brisim. It's a famous machlokas we have in Maseches Shabbos. Now, we know that if the eighth day falls out on Shabbos, you are allowed to do the Bris Milah, even though normally, if you were to cut some skin off on a regular Shabbos, that would be called the Chilul Shabbos. You're not allowed to do that. It's Asur De'oraisa. But if it's for the mitzvah of Bris Milah, if it's the eighth day, there's a specific pasuk that the Torah tells us that you're allowed to do the Milah, even though normally it would be called Chilul Shabbos, desecrating Shabbos. But the machlokes that comes up in Perek Yud Tes, Mishnah Aleph of Maseches Shabbos is, what about things that are not the actual milah, but things that you need in order to do the bris milah? Preparatory acts. For example, let's say you're all ready for the bris. The eighth day is going to be on Shabbos. Everyone's ready. You invited everybody in. Everyone's staying at your house. And, of course, the baby's in your house. And the morning comes, and you're going to do the bris. Oh, no, where's the knife? You forgot to bring the knife to the house before Shabbos. The knife is somewhere else in a different building, and between your house and that building is a Rishus HaRabim. So the only way you're going to be able to do the bris is by carrying the knife, which of course is the Isser D'oraisa of Hotzah. Can I carry the knife in order to be able to do the bris on Shabbos? The bris itself we know is mutter, but what about something before the bris, carrying the knife. So we paskin like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, can't do it. The only thing that pushes aside Shabbos is the actual bris milah, but nothing else. And we hold like Rabbi Akiva. But Rabbi Eliezer says, no, you can do anything that you need for the bris, many things, but including also carrying the knife. Now, even though we don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, I would like to talk about his opinion because it's still Torah and we still have to know what his rationale is. You see, the question, the kasha that everybody asks on this Mishnah is, good, I understand according to Rabbi Eliezer, you're allowed to do anything in order to be able to do the milo, you're allowed to mechal Shabbos, but if I have a choice of either carrying the knife to the baby or the baby to the knife, why would I carry the knife? Rabbi Eliezer says, carry the knife. That's what he says in the Mishnah, carry the knife. If I carry the knife, that would be an Isser de'oraisa. But if I carry the baby, there is something called chai nosei etz atzmo, a living being, whether it's a human being or an animal. When you carry it, it actually kind of carries itself. It helps you carry it by shifting its weight around. It's easier to carry live weight than dead weight, because the living being is doing something to help you carry it. And therefore, the Gemara actually says that if you carry an animal or a human being on Shabbos, there is no Isser d'oraisa of Hotza, it's not called carrying, because the living being is helping you carry it. And in fact, it's only an Isser d'rabbanan. But mi d'oraisa will be totally mutter. So I have two options here. Either doing an Isser d'oraisa of carrying the knife, or I have the option of carrying the baby to the knife, which mi d'oraisa, it's totally mutter. Okay, Isser d'rabbanan. So why does Rabbi Eliezer say, carry the knife? He should have said, carry the baby. So, there are three answers that I have seen. One is that, well, you see, the mother, let's think about this, the situation. The baby's going to need the mother after the bris. I mean, it's a newborn baby, it's going to need a feed from the mother. So the mother would have to go with the baby. Wherever the bris is, the mother's going to have to go to. Now, the problem is, the mother, since she just gave birth, can't really walk that far. So she's going to have to stay at the house. You're going to have to carry the baby to where the knife is. And then after you do the bris milah, well, the baby needs its mother and the mother can't walk. You're going to have to bring the baby back to the mother. So it's true on the way there, when you bring the baby to the knife, it's only an Isser d'rabbanan because of chai nosei etz atzmo, because the living being carries itself. But on the way back, now the baby's sick. You just gave it a bris. The baby is now sick. Once you have a sick animal or a sick human being, you no longer have the heter of chai nosei es atzmo, because at that point, since it's sick, it's not really going to help you carry it, and therefore, on the way back, it will be an Isser d'oraisa. Correct. On the way there, it's only Isser d'rabbanan. But you're going to have to bring it back to the mother, in which case that would be an Isser d'oraisa. So you have a choice. Either I could carry the knife, which would be one Isser d'oraisa, and then you're done. Or you carry the baby, which would involve, on the way there, an Isser d'rabbanan, and on the way back, an Isser d'oraisa. Better just to do one d'oraisa instead of a d'rabbanan and a d'oraisa, and therefore you carry the knife. That's one answer. The Ron says more than that. Even on the way there, even when you carry the baby to the knife, it would be an Isser d'oraisa, because since the baby can't walk yet, it's 8 days old, the principle of chai nosei etz atzmo does not apply. The fact that a human being helps you carry it only applies when the human being can walk himself. If he's a newborn and he can't walk, there's no heter of chai nosei etz atzmo, and therefore even on the way there, when he carry the baby to the knife, it would be an Isser d'oraisa. Therefore, it's better to carry the knife where there's one Isser d'oraisa, as opposed to carrying the baby where there'd be an Isser d'oraisa on the way there and another Isser d'oraisa on the way back. Third answer I saw is the Tosis Yontiv, which says a unbelievable chiddush. It says, forgetting about bringing it back, you don't have to bring it back, whatever it is. Even if the way there, let's say you just have to bring it one way, okay? You just have to bring the baby to the knife and you'd be done. And even if you want to say that it's only an Isser d'rabbanan to bring the baby to the knife, guess what? What's easier, carrying the knife or carrying the baby? Carrying the knife is lighter, it's much easier, it'll take you less time. The truth is, really the mitzvah is to do it on the eighth day. And the whole eighth day is kosher all the way until sunset. But there's something called Zrizin Makdim in the mitzvah, so you always try to do mitzvahs as soon as possible. So if you carry the knife, you will be able to do the bris earlier in the day than if you carry the baby. He says, therefore, unbelievable, he says, that milah of doing it a little earlier, I mean, how much is it, a couple minutes? Therefore, it's better to do an iser d'oraisa of carrying the knife and do the bris a little earlier than to carry the baby, which is only also d'rabanan, but it'll take longer and the bris will be later in the day. So it's unbelievable. The misos, Rizim Makdim the misos, allows us to do an iser d'oraisa as opposed to just carrying the baby, which would be an iser d'rabanan. Okay, if there's a bris meal this coming Shabbos, enjoy and don't forget to bring the knife beforehand, because in fact we don't pass like Rabbi Yezer anyway. We pass like Rabbi Akiva, so therefore there'll be no heter. You can't carry the knife or the baby. If you didn't bring the knife to the baby before Shabbos, you would be stuck. Except possibly, maybe you could get a goy to carry the knife. That's another whole shiur. Okay, have a good Shabbos.
Shalom Aleichem, everyone. This is Eric Goldman, and it is my honor and pleasure to share with you words of Torah for Parshas Lech Lecha. So this past week was my son's 7th birthday, and he loves Legos. So as he's gotten older, we've gotten him bigger and bigger Lego sets. So he started 3 or 4 years ago doing Legos that were 50 pieces or 75 pieces, and then as he's gotten older every year, maybe 100 pieces, 150 pieces. For his 7th birthday, my parents bought him a Lego set that was 695 pieces. It's only supposed to be for ages 8 to 12. He's only 7, but he loves it. He took the box, he tore it open, he brought it into his room, and we did not see him for the next few hours. And he finished one part of it, and then he came out for supper. He went right back inside to finish the next part of it. We could not get him to stop. He had a laser focus, and he wasn't going to be involved in anything else until the entire Lego set. It was an airport with a plane and a hangar and a terminal. It was a whole big thing. He had to finish every single part of it. So when I was thinking about this, and I saw an idea from the Chafetz Chaim and Parshas Lech Lecha, the two tied in beautifully. At the very beginning, there's a seemingly innocuous pasuk, but it's an obvious, glaring redundancy. As pasuk Hey says in Perek Yud Beis, so Avram and Sarai took their whole family and everything they had gained, and they went to go to Arta Canaan. They went to travel to the land of Canaan, and they actually went to the land of Canaan. And seemingly it's obvious. Avram Avinu set out to travel, and he went to go to Canaan. And then he actually entered Canaan. But points out the Chafetz Chaim, it's not so obvious. Because if you look just a few psukim earlier at the end of Parshas Noach, Avram's father Terach did not accomplish this goal. Vayikach Terach as Avram beno, Terach took Avram his son, ves Lot ben Haran ben beno, ve Sarai, he took Lot, and he took Sarai, Avram's wife, Eshes Avram beno, vayetsu itam Orkastim, they left to Orkastim, malechas Arat Canaan, to go to Canaan. But the pasuk says, vayavo ad Haran, they went to Haran, vayeshvu sham, they stopped there. They never reached Canaan, because they got to Haran, and that was it. Points out the Chafetz Chaim, that Avram had a goal, and that was to go to Canaan. And he did not stop until he accomplished his goal. And all too often, we are faced with the very same challenge, that we accept goals upon ourselves. And especially now at this time of the year, as we leave Tishrei and head into Cheshvan, we have hopefully accepted upon ourselves Kabbalahs through the Yomim Noraim, things that we want to change about ourselves, projects that we want to accept into the coming year. And we so easily get sidetracked. Or the monotony of the day and the details of everything we have to take care of, it bogs us down. And the excitement with which we started to accomplish that goal, it wears away so easily. It says the Chafetz Chaim, this is the lesson we have to learn from Avram Avinu, that he set out to go to Canaan, he had a goal in mind, what he wanted to accomplish, and he did not stop until he accomplished that goal. And so too for us, that the goals that we have in mind, that we would like to accomplish for this year, all of those kabbalos that we took upon ourselves, to make sure that we hold strong to them, that we do them day in and day out, even when it becomes so tedious and so repetitive, but to continue on with that goal. Much later on in the Torah, in Parshas Ekev, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us that kol ha-mitzvah shanochi mitzavcha yom tishmur nasos, all of the mitzvah that I'm commanding you today to guard to do, And Rashi says one explanation, kipshuto, kol ha-mitzvah means all of the mitzvos. All 613 mitzvos, this is what I am commanding you to do. Make sure you do them. But then Rashi goes on to say, the Medrash Haggadah says, it's not that all of the different mitzvos, but kol ha-mitzvah, the one mitzvah you're accepting upon yourself, the one goal that you have in mind, make sure kol ha-mitzvah. Make sure you do all of it. Make sure you finish it. Because to start something is commendable, to be sure. To take upon ourselves kabbalas is a very important thing. But at the end of the day, it's kol ha-mitzvah. It's the one who follows through and accomplishes the entire goal. That's the one who the mitzvah is really called based on. Be'ezus Hashem Yisparach, we should have the strength and the determination to have a laser focus on our goals, to see what we want to be able to accomplish, to lock ourselves in, to become obsessed even in accomplishing our goals. And with that, we'll get the Siyata Dishmaya to accomplish everything we set out for the coming year. Thank you and have a wonderful Shabbos.
Thank you for listening. Feel free to learn about all the programs that the Skokie Community Kol has to offer. For any questions, suggestions, or to subscribe to our weekly newsletter, please email us at info@skokiekolo.org.